You're listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Hi, and welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. My name is Andrew Berkshire, and I'm back from vacation after a week off where Mary did an impeccable job hosting the show with her friend Rachel from Locked On Flyers. Two great shows, Mary. How are you doing?
I'm good. It was weird not hearing you on the other side of the call last week, Andrew, but I'm glad you had a good time on vacation. Rachel, great person. Love to have her on the show. And we had Charlie O'Connor as a guest. Glad we talked all that Flyers stuff because I don't know where we're going to talk about it in this show, but Flyers made some big moves, and I'm glad we had a little bit of a preview as to maybe potentially what they were going to do before they made some big moves over the weekend.
Yeah, there's been so much news that I'm not even sure how we're going to cover it all. I know like we want to talk about the expansion draft as much as possible because we're queuing that up right before it happens on Wednesday, and we're going to be talking expansion draft on Thursday with Erica from Locked On Kraken, promoting her new show. She's a great journalist, excellent person, so we're excited to talk to her. But obviously, there's been trades like crazy that have gone on. And, you know, there's speculation about this expansion draft that we can't ignore. And then, of course, we've got the big LGBTQ plus story that came out of the first prospect, essentially, that's trying to make the NHL Predators prospect, Luke Prokop, who came out as gay, which is something that we're going to have to get into. But before we do that, like, we got to catch up a little bit because Mary and I haven't talked for over a week now because I was on vacation camping. Mm-hmm. So Mary Clark from For the Win, myself, Andrew Berkshire from the Montreal Gazette. We're going to get right into it. Mary, how was your week aside from the hosting?
Week was good. Hosting was fun. I can't complain too much. I think it went really well. So thank you all for listening. Then this past weekend, I went to visit family in Delaware. So did a bit of work. And had some drinks, relaxed with family, went to the beach. It was just a quick trip to see some family. So I cannot complain. I had a great weekend, had, you know, lots of margaritas. I ordered myself a drink when the Ryan Ellis trade went down because I was not working at that moment. And I was sitting at a bar and I was like, let's do it. It was a great weekend. Just had lots of fun with the family, and now I'm back and ready for the chaos of the next week because there is so much going to be happening in the next week. I mean, we've got the expansion draft, the regular draft, and then the start of free agency all within a week of each other. So it is going to be jam-packed, and we're going to have so much to talk about. It's going to be very difficult to, I think, try and talk about everything that has gone down, especially because we missed a whole bunch over the weekend. But we'll do our best, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my week was pretty nuts. Two kids and a dog camping.
Nice.
It was, I guess, a puppy, I should say, not a dog, even though it's the size of a dog. My parents have a sheepadoodle, which is part sheepdog, part poodle. Aww. And it is gigantic, so strong, and yet so lazy, and became so attached to my kids over the course of the week that, or I guess over the course of 10 days, that the whole drive, the first day when my parents left, he was just barking and whining, and he would sleep outside Miles's room. He just like he couldn't separate himself. He was always wanted to be near the kids, so that was fun. But it was a long week. I'll say that it was fun, but it was a long week with all the little ones camping. Mm-hmm. I think it's tougher for a 1 year old than the almost 4 year old. The almost 4 year old was absolutely pumped, but. It was tough on the one-year-old because there just wasn't a lot that he could do. He didn't have the freedom. You know, we were in an RV, so there wasn't a lot of space when he was inside, and we had some rain, so he got pretty cranky at times. But overall, fun times. Let's shift into our first topic, which we have to talk about, Luke Prokop. I hope I'm saying that well. Mm-hmm. He's a prospect with the Nashville Predators. He came out as gay, did an interview with Pierre LeBrun, and also posted it on his social media with an overwhelmingly positive response. How did you see this situation, Mary?
I saw it when I, after I woke up on Monday morning, and It was fantastic to see. I mean, it was his statement on social media was fantastic. Him talking about how he wanted to get this off his chest so he could, you know, present the real self, his real self to the world, really, you know, struck a chord with me because I came out as bi a handful of years ago. So I completely understand what he's going through. I mean, obviously not on as big of a stage as he is because he is a, you know, a pro hockey player who has people's eyes on him all the time, and especially will be now because of his statement. But this is fantastic for the sport of hockey. It almost feels like the NHL doesn't deserve someone like him, considering the way that they've the way that they've you know, treated the, you know, hockey is for everyone mantra, and it really doesn't always feel like hockey is for everyone. But he came out because he wanted to show that hockey can truly be for everyone. So I was super proud to see this. What a courageous statement. So happy. I'm definitely in his corner for sure now. I really hope he makes it, to the NHL level, either with the Predators or with another team in the future. It's really great for the sport of hockey. The overwhelmingly positive response, I've seen nothing but positive responses. And that's really warmed my heart. This is great for hockey. I mean, obviously we have to mention that he's the first gay player who has an active NHL contract. Obviously, right. In the sport of hockey, women's hockey, there have been a lot of gay women's players. So we have to acknowledge that too. But this is a major right. This is a major step, and it's coming like off the heels of what Carl Nassib from the Raiders in the NFL. It's been, I think, less than a month since he came out as gay and became the NFL's first pro gay player, or at least like active one.
Right. So, because Michael Sam was there, but
not active
anymore, obviously.
Yeah. So, it is. It's really been incredible these past couple of months, or at least in the past month, seeing things change and seeing how accepting everybody has been. I mean, obviously, you're gonna get those people who aren't, but the overwhelmingly positive response has drowned out, I think, any negativity. And like I said, I don't think the NHL deserves him because they have stumbled their way through trying to make hockey is for everyone a thing and haven't really succeeded that much. But now that this is becoming, you know, a thing that we see more often now, I really hope that the NHL will continue to try and make strides to make hockey really truly for everyone.
Yeah, truly inclusive. And I think, like, I don't want to be like the negative Nelly about the whole situation, but at the same time, I did find like the amount of tweets from NHL players and NHL teams that also included the hockey is for everyone hashtag made it seem like a very corporate response. Mm-hmm. Some players obviously did a much more personal response, which was great to see. I think like from teams, it's just generic stuff that you kind of expect. And as much as the reaction was very positive, I think it would be dishonest for us to not say like there will be roadblocks in Luke's career because of this, right? There will be people who are not even writing him off to begin with, but more quick to make decisions about him because he's come out. And I think obviously like it's a sad reality of the world that we live in. And it's part of why I think he's so courageous to do this. Yes, he's signed a pro contract, but he hasn't made the NHL yet. Like he's put himself out there, and I hope this is the launching pad for him to blossom as a player as well as a person, because he's able to be himself and he just makes it an impossibility that he won't be a regular NHLer. That would be such a phenomenal story. But I think that with the NHL the way it is, like there is a very hyper-masculine, toxic masculinity culture that is existing in this league. And there will be roadblocks, you know, and I just think that makes him even more courageous. That's my overall point with I'm just so impressed by him.
Yeah, same. I mean, you make a good point about it being feeling like the response from certain, you know, players, teams feeling a bit corporate. But I think as we move towards the future, I think them, even if it sounds a bit corporate, just them saying something means something.
Yes, 100%.
Because if they're, you know, there's like a person like who's a fan of a team or a certain player struggling with their identity, they see that, even though it may be a canned response. I think that means something to people. So I hope in the future, obviously, it's, you know, less corporate and doesn't feel as canned, like specifically canned responses. But that definitely means something to people. Definitely something I like to see, the amount of outpouring of support, you know, from the teams and players. And you're right, though, he is going to face barriers in his career, whether it just be in hockey or in life. But I hope that this groundswell of support for him, helps him not falter, opens doors for other opportunities, or people are just, you know, more accepting and more loving. And I think that's kind of what we need right now.
Yeah. And I think credit should be given to a lot of the social media managers around the leagues for the teams, because not only were they making statements on their social media accounts, when they did get pushback from fans, especially on Instagram, the NHL social media account, team social media accounts went in on people. Not mean, but like consistently reinforced the idea that this is not something that's like, even people who were saying like, oh, well, this isn't a big deal, it shouldn't be a big deal, why are we even talking about it? It is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus community saying like, we have to stop doing that, like the same thing people do with racism, with like the colorblindness, right? Stop pretending that it's not a big deal and like, oh, we just all look past it. Like, yes, that might be true for you, but it's very important, especially for young kids, to have not just this representation, but the acceptance of this representation and having it out there in the forefront. And I got to give credit to the social media managers around the NHL for really pushing on that and making sure that it wasn't just the canned statements that went out.
Yeah, it was really great to see. That's the type of stuff we need, obviously in the NHL, but all over. And hopefully, you know, some of that, you know, rises to the top, like permeates all through the NHL system and, you know, hockey culture as a whole, because it definitely is lacking in some respects. I mean, we've talked about the ways in which they are lacking in past podcasts, but this is all positive for me. I really hope the best for his future. I'm watching his NHL career with interest now. I'm definitely a big fan of his now. Good for him. This is incredible stuff. Super, super brave and courageous to put this out there. But I'm glad he's living the life he wants to live, and that, you know, he's living his truth. And I think that's all we can ask for.
Yeah. I think the way he put it was his whole authentic self, right?
Yes.
Which is like a rallying cry for that community and all people who have like, differentiated or like gender non-conforming people and different sexualities. I'm just really happy with how this went down, and I'm like you, Mary. I hope this groundswell in the NFL as well also create like ripples into the NHL, and we get things moving forward to a more inclusive hockey culture. I don't know if we're there yet all the way. Mm-hmm. In terms of like getting it pushed forward, but I really hope this is the start of it. And I think this has been a positive year in that regard.
Yeah.
Which is always good.
You know, like, oh, for sure.
It's always good not to go backwards. Mm-hmm. So we're probably going to wrap up on that. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Carey Price and whether or not he's going to be on the Seattle Kraken. But first, we have to talk to you about BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for your sporting needs, including the MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. You don't need to sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Promo code LOCKEDON. So, Mary, the Montreal Canadiens are in absolute chaos right now. And I love it because it's such a news tornado. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's incredible to view, even if I'm, you know, not someone who would be writing about it, just consuming all the content going around right now has been unbelievable. It's hard to even catch up.
Yes.
So the Canadians have gone from 3 wins away from winning a Stanley Cup, 3 wins that seemed very far away considering their opponent, to Shea Weber is so injured he may never play again. Carey Price is so injured that he might miss most of next season. And then both Weber and Price are no longer protected coming into the expansion draft. So Seattle could take Carey Price. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, but by the way, he only waived his no movement clause to go into the draft. And if Seattle takes him, they can't move him without his permission. And they're probably going to lose Phil Deneau, which came out while we start recording this podcast, that it's extremely unlikely that he's back with the Canadiens. He's going to the unrestricted free agency. Like, did this team fall backwards into a rebuild after almost winning a Stanley Cup? Like, what's going on here?
It feels like this reminds me of when the Flyers were in the Stanley Cup in, what, 2010? And was it that summer or the summer after when, you know, they traded Richards and Carter? I feel like it was the summer after, but, like, it was, like, very, very close to after that. They, like, blew things up. I mean, I guess it was more intentional in that regard, but it kind of reminds me of that they were, like, so close. And then things happened, and they were like, we can't do this anymore. It's time to go. But, oh, man, I mean, so much has happened to the Canadiens. Like, I mean, you were right. They were 3 wins away from, you know, winning a Stanley Cup. I mean, look at where they were just a couple weeks ago. Like, the season didn't end. Like, the season ended only, like, a few weeks ago. It really has not been that long since they were playing hockey.
It's an incredible turnaround.
It absolutely is. I cannot believe this. I mean, I can believe the Shea Weber one because I feel like, was it last
That's
year?
That's been a long time coming.
Yeah, last year, 2 years ago, there was that report where...
From Nick Kiprios,
There was, like, something where he was going to retire, he was super injured. It basically was, like, a premature report piece. That's basically what was said then is kind of being said now. I feel like I remember that, and then it got, like, walked back.
It got walked back because Weber kind of, like, made fun of it, and he even came into a practice pretending to use his stick as a cane like an old man, like he was unable to walk. But... on the other hand, like, when that Nick Kiprios report came out, I believed it fully because days after the Subban-Weber trade, I was told by sources within the Nashville Predators that Weber had a foot injury that was going to end his career.
Wow.
And it was only a matter of time.
And that was how long ago again?
I mean, that was like 5 years ago now.
And he's been playing with these things. I mean, that's a testament to Shea Weber as a person and a player as to, you know... Yeah. What he's done since, you know, accruing these injuries. And so I wanted to at least get that out of the way because I know the Shea Weber thing, I guess, was, I think, the least surprising thing. But the Carey Price thing was wild to hear at first.
I think it's been, like, it's the news cycle of Carey Price, right? Because the injury stuff is not that surprising if you followed Price's career. He's been struggling with the lower body injuries for, like, 7 or 8 seasons now. It's been, like, a constant... Ever since Chris Kreider took him out in the conference final in 2014, it's been a series of lower body injuries for Price that have really impacted his play. But it's going from, like, Carey Price is the team MVP, Carey Price might be injured, Carey Price is definitely injured, he might need surgery, Carey Price might miss half the next season. Oh, Carey Price is being exposed in the expansion draft. The Canadians aren't even going to protect him. It's like, what?
Okay.
What? Like,
I actually think, I know it's crazy. I almost kind of think it's a smart move considering I don't think Seattle's going to take him.
I'm with you. I was with you like when it first happened, but I'm starting to hear more and more.
I don't.
That I'm like, it's 50-50 they
think,
might.
Okay. I want it to happen for max chaos. This is like, I absolutely want this to happen for max chaos and for this to possibly bite, you know, Mark Bergevin in the butt. Like, I absolutely want this to happen just because I think it would be hilarious and the takes would be on fire. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think the injury stuff is going to scare Seattle away. That and the fact that this contract is going to take up 1/8 of the salary cap, and Seattle has 29 other players to pick. I mean, I know that's kind of how it works for, you know, Montreal and their salary cap stuff, but everything I've heard about Ron France is that he wants to have cap flexibility, and Carey Price is the antithesis of cap flexibility.
This is true.
And I just think that it's not going to work. I did a mock draft for the win, which you can read, and you can find on my Twitter account. I'm going to shill some of my stuff because I've worked really hard. I worked really hard on all this away. On all this stuff. So I thought about it. I was trying to make Carey Price work, but I can't see an avenue where it works. So that's why I think this is kind of smart, because you expose Carey Price, whose injury stuff is like pretty scary, and then also his cap hit is huge. And
the way I put it in the doc was he has an injury list as long as a CVS receipt, exactly. Which I think you would appreciate as an American, right?
Oh, I absolutely appreciate that. I thought that was incredible humor. I love it. But I think that since they're protecting Jake Allen, too, like I think because Jake Allen might have been one of the players, like he was probably high on the priority list for Seattle before the protection list came out. If that's what I saw anyway, a lot of people were predicting Jake Allen was the pick out of Montreal. I think this is an incredibly smart move if it works. There is a universe out there where it doesn't, and we'll see on Wednesday if this is that universe. But I think that this is a very smart move. I mean, I know Price's injury stuff can't be avoided. If he's injured, he's injured. But I think that Montreal is trying to almost teams are almost trying to try and be like Tampa Bay and how like smart that they're like doing these protection lists. So I definitely think that this was, you know, if it works, it's a great maneuver. Really, I think it's going to work. I think it's going to work, but there is a universe where it doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the end of the day on Wednesday, we're going to find out, like, are people going to praise Mark Bergevin as a like poker face genius, or is it going to be a disaster? Because I think as much as people are saying like, oh, well, even if Price gets picked, that's $10.5 million off the cap. It's a bad contract. He's getting older. But the Canadians don't like Caden Primo is a possibility for somebody who could take over as a number one goaltender in the future. But as much as it's easy to view that as like, well, they got out from under something. Carey Price has been the face of the franchise since 2009. And losing him for nothing, it's a tough pill to swallow for, I think, most Canadiens fans. There are people who have never really liked Price and will probably celebrate, but for most people who watch that team, I think that would be a very painful thing to see. I think most people want Carey Price to finish his career with the Canadiens. He's the all-time leader in wins now, I believe. He's like the guy who's owning almost all the goaltending records within that organization. The Canadiens haven't had a legit star player play their whole career with them in a long, long time. So it would be very tough, I think, just emotionally, even if the team could recover in a couple of years on the ice, you know? So it's a very weird one. But I wanted to like just go over, because we talked about the negatives. I think there's some positives for Seattle that make this a little bit attractive. For starters, Price is from not necessarily the Pacific Northwest United States, but that area on the other side of the border, right? He's from Anaheim Lake, BC, not far from Vancouver. His wife, Angela, is from Washington in the Pacific Northwest, in that state. Price played junior hockey there in Tri-City, you know, and he's also a legitimate star player in the league who has repeatedly shown he can deliver it when it counts. So it's like, yes, the regular seasons are not great. However, with his history, with his stock, with how much respect people have for him, with how much respect people have for his leadership abilities, as a mentor for the young goalies that Seattle will absolutely pick from other teams through this expansion draft, I can see a lot of positives for Seattle doing this, and because they're an expansion team, eating that $10.5 million salary without much of a worry, right? Because, like, yes, it's long-term, but, like, we don't know when Price is going to retire. His career or his contract is not a plus 35 contract, so when he retires, it's just off the books. He wouldn't need to go on LTIR. He wouldn't need to – there's no cap recapture penalty. is very interesting to me. The main thing that I think that would push against it is if the Kraken feel that he's essentially done and they don't want to pay that $11 million signing bonus due before next season.
Yeah. And the positives, all the positives you listed out for Seattle make sense to me. I mean, he would be the de facto Marc-Andre Fleury, the face of the franchise yes. of this team. No doubt, 100%.
Fleury's career rejuvenated after that, right? Like, he looked kind of done in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He was the de facto backup. He'd had a series of, like, he had like a 6-year stretch where he wasn't just bad in the playoffs. He was probably the worst player in the world in the postseason. He single-handedly lost like 4 series for the Penguins. So despite the fact that he had come off back-to-back cups, he wasn't a big factor in those cups. He played spot duty while Matt Murray was injured, but he wasn't the guy, mm-hmm. right? And now look at him now. You know, who knows what next season holds for him, but Fleury has been fantastic. I do wonder if Price has that in him because of his injury history, but it's a gamble that I can see them taking. It gives you instant credibility,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. I keep thinking back to, you know, them wanting cap flexibility. I think that Seattle and Vegas are trying to do two different things here. I'm willing to be surprised because there are a lot of players, which I'm sure we'll get to when we talk more about the expansion draft as a whole. There are a lot of players available that can be not instant home runs, but they are there. Big swings. I don't think that when I did my mock draft, I don't think that's the path Seattle will go down. Mostly because it is hard to. You would think that, you know, an 81 million cap, like salary cap limit is pretty high to pick 30 players, but it is not. In fact, it is. It's very difficult to do, is what I found during my mock draft exercise. But like, I get it. He would become the face of the franchise, and it would be absolutely devastating for Montreal to lose him for nothing, just like that. 3 wins away from the Stanley Cup. That's like unheard of. I just don't think it's going to happen. I am willing to be surprised here, and I know that there is, you know, a possibility that he will be taken. I just think that the risks, you know, taking on a big contract,
they're large.
They're taking on a big contract that eats up a huge part of your salary. The injury. So if you're getting him and he's injured, then what was the point of getting him other than, you know, getting credibility with the league? That's not, you know, a winning formula. So I think
you know, what's the one thing that makes me think that is not going to happen, like absolutely not going to happen, is we talk about like the injury risks and like the boom or bust possibility of Carey Price. It's okay to do that with a big salaried player that has star potential one time, mm-hmm. right? If you're an expansion team, you don't want a bunch of them. You don't even want 2. And there's another player I think it's more attractive for them in that scenario, and it's Vladimir Tarasenko.
Oh, yeah. I didn't. Okay, so for my mock draft, I didn't go with like any of the big guys like Landeskog or Tarasenko. I think Tarasenko might get traded. I think he might get traded. He might get traded elsewhere. I mean, I know the Flyers are asking around on him. That's very possible that Seattle could facilitate a 3-way trade. There's a lot of balls up in the air for Tarasenko, I think. I think that would be, I think of the players, like the big players like Price, Tarasenko, Gabriel Landeskog, it's like some of those big names. I think Tarasenko might have been the easiest to get because, you know, his contract's already known. If you're Gabriel Landeskog, you have to negotiate a new contract, and he wants big money on the open market. And obviously Price has his injury history and also commands a huge salary cap. So I thought long and hard about Tarasenko, putting him on my list, but I ended up not, because it is very difficult to build a roster under the salary cap and try and think of, oh, you need to sign, you know, your RFAs and UFAs and stuff like that. But I think that of the 3 of those players, the most likely is probably Tarasenko, because, I mean, he also has an injury history, but he, I think, carries less risks in terms of his salary cap and stuff like that.
So I think we basically have to answer 2 questions here, and we'll do it 1-word answers for both. Should the Seattle Kraken take Carey Price, and will they? You go first, Mary.
No and no.
I'm going to say They should, yes.
Okay.
And they won't. No.
All right.
All right. So we're gonna wrap that up there. Coming up next, we're gonna talk more about the expansion draft, who are the best players available, who stands to lose the most. But first, we've got to talk to you about Rock Auto. Players are gonna be traveling across the United States and Canada to get to Seattle real shortly, and they want to make sure that their vehicles are in tip-top shape, especially players like, you know, Mark Edward Vlasic, who makes the trip from Quebec to San Jose every year because his dog doesn't like to fly. And this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouses happen to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30, 50, or even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and their prices are reliably low for every customer, do-it-yourselfers or professionals. They have everything you could need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us?" section so that we know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Expansion draft hype. What is there to even say here? There's so much. I don't even know where to start. There's so much going on. The Canadians obviously are such big players here, and apparently people are across the NHL are very upset with the way this is being handled with the disclosing of injuries. Although I think the late ending to the playoffs makes a lot of sense for an excuse why this stuff wasn't disclosed earlier. You know, it's not like there's been a lot of time since, as Mary brought up earlier in the podcast. But the Canadians aren't the only team that are going to lose a good player here. There are some teams that have made some very perplexing decisions. There are some teams that have just been put in tough spots. The Stanley Cup champions, for example, everyone talks about how great the Tampa Bay Lightning are for good reason. Tampa Bay Lightning are going to lose a really good player.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be Yanni Gourde, right?
Yeah, that's who I have Seattle taking in my mock draft. I mean, why not?
He might be the best player available.
Yeah.
Like, across every team.
Yeah. I mean, he brings so much, you know, I mean, offensively, but also defensively. I mean, he's a great two-way player. There's a lot you can say about, you know, I mean, he's not like the biggest name, for sure, but he was definitely a major factor in Tampa Bay, you know, winning back-to-back Stanley Cups. I mean, he kills penalties, like I said, great two-way player, and his contract, I mean, I know his term is hefty. He's got 4 more years left at, $5.167 million per year, but I think for, you know, a player like that, I would take him, because, I mean, like I said, Seattle's got, you know, room to spare. Well, I don't know about room to spare, but they've got, you know, salary cap that they can play with. I do, though, want to at least make, I don't know if we're going to, I don't see this in the doc, so I do want to at least talk about just very briefly the Ryan Ellis thing, because I think that was, I know people are clamoring for my thoughts on it, because I spent so much time last week talking about the Flyers with people. Very surprised that they were able to, that the Flyers were just gave away Nolan Patrick and Phil Myers and didn't give up a draft pick. Ryan Ellis is exactly the type of defender they need, who can sit alongside Ivan Provorov, instantly makes the team better. Obviously, I wish the best for Nolan Patrick and Myers in their respective new teams. I didn't think Nolan Patrick was going to succeed here. There was just too much baggage, too much injury history here. So hope the best for both of them, but the Flyers instantly got better and they still have their first round draft pick to play with, so either they can draft it or they can make another big splash right before the draft. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next, because Chuck Fletcher has turned a lot of fans around, I think, on the Flyers, because this is the Flyers won this trade. There's no other way about it. It was a really, really great thing to see. I was surprised that they were going to do anything even before the roster freeze on Saturday at 3 p.m. So just wanted to give a shout out to that, because I know that people were probably wondering, hey, Mary, what's your thoughts on the Flyers trade? But that's it. So I guess we'll continue back to this conversation about the expansion draft. But it is, I guess, tangentially related, because Nashville did protect 5 defensemen, which I thought was strange. I'm not sure why they did that, because they left a bunch of forwards available that Seattle could take. And the big thing was Ryan Ellis is not one of those defensemen because he is gone now.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Ryan Ellis trade for Philadelphia as well. I mean, there's a possibility that Nolan Patrick can gain back what everyone expected him to be when he was drafted. But I think you're right that it probably wouldn't have been in Philly. There's just not the opportunity there. And it seems like the Vegas Golden Knights have been after Nolan Patrick for a long time based on some of the reports around this trade. So it's really interesting to see how that turned out. But I think it's extra good for the Flyers because Ryan Ellis is a very weird player. He alternates each year between being very bad defensively and being among the league's best defensive players. And last year he was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
So expect Ryan Ellis to have a phenomenal year in his first year with the Philadelphia Flyers and probably not to repeat it the following year.
It's nice, though, to have hope for at least one year for the Flyers. At least one.
So I think the Flyers are kind of primed to surprise people coming into next year, right? Because they had things building up towards a successful team 2 years ago, and then last year just completely fell apart. I think they're going to be back in the playoffs this year. Everything looks solid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to be, you know, a division contender and look as strong as they did 2 years ago, but I think they're going to be in there. I'm really liking this this move for them. But like you said, to the expansion draft, obviously Yanni Gourde is going to be the best player taken or one of the most obvious choices. Some other players that were left unprotected that really surprised me was one of the ones that I actually tweeted about the other day was Dylan DeMello from the Winnipeg Jets. And I got some pushback because Jets fans really like Logan Stanley, but Logan Stanley was one of the most sheltered players in the league last year. And just because he's big doesn't mean he's good.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he scored 2 goals in an elimination game, 2 very fluky goals that Carey Price should have had both. I don't think Logan Stanley is that good.
Mm-hmm.
And people are comparing him to Zdeno Chara because he's big. No. I mean, you make a side deal to protect Logan Stanley if you really want. But Dylan DeMello is the only legitimately good defensive defenseman on the Winnipeg Jets. And I think losing him would be a big deal.
Yeah.
The one saving grace there is that apparently there's rumors that Seattle might take Mason Appleton. I don't really understand why, because I think Appleton's fine, but there's tons of fine forwards available, and Dylan DeMello would be one of the keystones of a solid defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I in my mock draft I picked Dylan DeMello because he was the best player available from Winnipeg for sure. I mean, for some teams it was slim pickings, but then others it was like, what do I do here? There's just so many options, and you know, I can only pick one player, and of course the salary cap is a factor. But yeah, Dylan DeMello is a player I highlighted for sure, and I think he's probably the most likely pick out of Winnipeg. But there are really, I mean, I wrote a list of a handful of players that intrigued me, I mean, that were, you know, left unprotected. I mean, we talked about Carey Price. We talked a little bit about Tarasenko. Like I said, I think that he's probably... I think he probably gets traded somewhere else and doesn't go to St. Louis, because I think St. Louis or doesn't go to Seattle. I think Seattle takes Vince Dunn out of the Blues.
Yes, I think he
also adds a really good he's a really good defenseman. I think he will add something to that team, because I see Seattle's goals is trying to be competitive, but also different than Vegas.
Yeah, they're not trying to go to the Stanley Cup final in year one. They're trying to build
for longevity. Yeah, they're trying to build for longevity. So that's my thoughts there. I mean, Landeskog is a big one too, but I think that his asking price might be too high for Seattle, just because he wants, I think, what, up to $10 million on the open market, basically. And that is a hefty price. But I don't think he's coming back to Colorado. I just don't know if that is something Seattle wants to tangle with. I had on my list, Seattle's not going to take him. I just thought it was interesting that PK Subban was unprotected, just because his career journey has been interesting to me. I would like to see him, you know, find his feet again and get some stability, because he is in the last year of an 8-year, $72 million contract. I don't think that they're taking him. I just thought it was interesting. So I hope that he finds the stability he's probably looking for. So it's just a few names, but there are some really interesting players. I mean, Nashville had Ryan Johansson up there. I didn't pick him in my mock draft, but there are some.
No, I think Nashville's going to be very disappointed that neither DeShane or Johansson get picked. Cause...
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I debated.
I don't think that team is going to take
I debated him. Hard. I'm like, man, do I pick Johansson here? But no, I picked Yarncroak because I think that's probably easier cap hit to digest. Much, much easier than DeShane or Johansson. So.
Yeah. I think one of the big ones that stuck out to me, I mean, obviously the Carolina Hurricanes can only protect so many, but Nito Niederreiter, I think, has a big possibility of being a really big pick for them. And Mark Giordano.
Yes. I mean,
I was kind of surprised that there, I mean, maybe there's a side deal in the works for Calgary to keep him, but that's crazy.
I'm not surprised I think, because that had been talked about for a while. It's not
surprising, but at the same time surprising that it actually happened. But I wonder, like, I look at Calgary and it's not like they're like the mark of solid team building by any chance, but I wonder if Calgary putting their captain out there is like the shrewd move for the future that the Tampa Bay Lightning refused to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough to criticize a team that's won back-to-back Stanley Cups, but I think I'd rather risk losing Steven Stamkos at this point than Yanni Gourde.
Mm.
And maybe it's because he wouldn't waive his no-trade clause, maybe. But I would consider trying to push that with Stamkos.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
It's unlikely they pick him, right? $8.5 million. He's essentially an even-strength third liner now with a power play weapon.
Eh. Yeah. I'm not surprised that Giordano was exposed. I mean, he still has gas left in the tank, but this is, I mean, I've heard stuff about this, like, going back for some time now, that he was probably going to be the player exposed, and I think Seattle will pick him. He has a cap hit of $6.75 million for just the next season. He's definitely a player that they can pick and have a leadership role for the whole season, or they could flip him at the trade deadline for... possibly a first round pick or first or second round pick in the draft, like in the next year's draft. So I definitely think that I guess I just wasn't surprised because I heard so much about that was probably the pick. I know Flyers fans will be wondering who I have coming out of Philly. I think it's going to be JVR. I don't think they're going to want to tangle with Voracek's hefty contract, and Shane Gostisbehere has had a little bit of career uncertainty. So I think JVR played himself last year into a pick to Seattle because he was kind of good last year. I mean, he's a streaky goal scorer. But that's kind of how it is with a player like him. He didn't just pull power play points either. He had 24 even strength assists last year, which was surprising that he moved into a bit more of a playmaker role. So I think that's probably the pick there, which, you know, frees up the Flyers' salary cap even more for them to make moves, which I thought was a really neat idea. I thought that, you know, if they moved Nolan Patrick, that they, you know, might protect JVR instead of him. But no, they protected Nick Aubé-Kubel instead. So I think that basically forces Seattle to take one of the higher contracts, which I think is good for the Flyers because they clearly want cap flexibility to do something and not just Ryan Ellis anymore. They clearly have something else in the tank.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I think JVR is just one of those guys that his skill level is so plug and play for most NHL teams that he's an easy pick to make. And it's not like he brings anything outside of the net front that you're worried about falling off. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a terrible defensive player. He always has been. So you know what you're getting with JVR. The only question mark with him is injuries, right? And sometimes he misses significant time, but that's just the same with, like, injury risk is there with every single player, even players with no injury history, as the Canadians have found out with Shea Weber, because he barely missed games at all when he was with Nashville, and even his first couple seasons with the Canadians. So, you know, there's always a risk, especially the older a player
gets. You know what I am surprised about, though?
What?
Is I'm going to move away from the Flyers just because,
yeah, for sure.
Because I think I've taken too much time with the Flyers. But I am surprised that the Maple Leafs traded for McCann and then immediately exposed him. I don't understand that.
I thought that was brilliant.
Really? Okay, explain why, Andrew.
Okay, so I think I was talking, it was either Steve Dangle or Adam Wilde, one of the two, was asking me about that as well, because I said that I thought it was smart, and they were like, what? Why? Because the Maple Leafs knew that they were going to lose Alex Kerfoot, right? So by trading for McCann, and as much as they traded a prospect, like, prospects don't matter to a contending team for the most part, especially unless they're going to be amazing, doesn't matter. You can just fill depth, however. Like, the Maple Leafs have consistently found guys, right? So they traded Holloway for McCann. McCann will likely get drafted. So by making that trade, either the Seattle Kraken take Kerfoot or they take McCann, but they've already kept that 3C slot safe.
Sure.
Right? So they don't need to make an additional move.
Sure, but Jared McCann is cheaper, younger, and slightly better, I think, than Kerfoot. So I don't... Sure. Why wouldn't you protect him and leave Kerfoot exposed?
They're both exposed.
I know, but it's just if I was Seattle facing this decision, I'm picking Jared McCann, then they just made that trade for nothing. And I mean, sure, you protect, you know, keep Kerfoot, but I think if you given the choice between the two players, I think that McCann is the better one. To me, it just doesn't make sense from that, like, perspective of it seems as if you got the same player, but just a little bit better, younger, and cheaper, and yet you exposed him still. I don't know.
I think this is the way I see it, is that trading for McCann to protect Kerfoot is cheaper than trading something to Seattle to protect Kerfoot, right? So, like, there's an off chance that Seattle doesn't take McCann. Oh, a very low chance, right? So I think the chance of possibly keeping McCann and upgrading over Kerfoot, you know, for not that big of a cost is very interesting, very intriguing. And they've essentially protected five forwards now by making this trade. I think it is really good gamesmanship by the Toronto Maple Leafs and Kyle Dubas, even if it's like an exciting player to acquire who they might immediately lose. They're no worse off entering next season now than they would have been without an expansion draft, which is pretty cool.
Sure. And I suppose that the difference for the Maple Leafs isn't going to be a Jared McCann or an Alexander Kerfoot at the end of the day. The difference for them is, you know, like we've seen in the playoffs, their top players scoring when needed. So yeah. You make a good point in that they really just got essentially the same player, and that really won't make a difference. But it did confuse me a little bit, and I don't know why Pittsburgh just traded him to begin with and didn't protect him at the outset, because I was really expecting him to stay with Pittsburgh. But I'm not really sure what they're doing up there with some of their decisions they made, but I don't know if we have time to go into it. It just, you know.
I mean, it shows you how much the market changes because of the expansion draft, right? Because McCann just came off an insane year. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not repeatable because his on-ice shooting percentage was like double his career average. So his offensive impact was completely absurd. But he's a great two-way player, good middle-of-the-lineup guy, you know, can play on special teams. So you would assume that in a normal year, trading a guy coming off of a high like that, the Penguins would get an absolute huge package, but because if they don't trade him, they're going to lose him to Seattle anyway, they get very little. Mm-hmm. So I find that super interesting, because there are so many trades happening right now, some of them little, some of them big, that I don't think it's going to stop after expansion. I think the draft is going to be equally crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I know you had put that in the doc before we move on, if this offseason is going to live up to the hype. I actually think it will. There's too many. I mean, lest we forget, Jack Eichel is still out there, possibly going to get moved. I mean, I know topic of conversation has moved away from him, but he's still out there. I really think with the amount of players available, and just, you know, the quality of players, or at least the names of players available, I think that we're going to have a wicked offseason, because it's going to be shorter. Teams are kind of wanting to stretch their legs after the pandemic year. Players want to move around because of stability, or, you know, they don't like the situation they're in. They want something different. I really think that we're heading for a off season of incredible movement. Very possible I'm wrong, because the NHL does, you know, decide to, you know,
get boring out of
nowhere. Get boring out of nowhere and disappoint me in times like this. But there are, considering the amount of names that are out there, we are really looking at something special, I think, this offseason.
I totally agree. And I can't wait until the expansion draft coming up on Wednesday, and then breaking it down with you and also with Erica from Locked On Kraken. But we're going to wrap up the hockey talk now. We're going to come back with our pop culture roulette segment, where we're going to talk about the finale of Loki. So spoiler warning, if you haven't watched it yet, save that segment for a little bit later. But before we get to Loki, we've got to tell you about Built Bar. Built Bar is the most delicious tasting protein bar of all time. It comes in 9 delicious flavors, so there's something for everyone. Coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. Know what my favorite flavor is? It's going to be the mint brownie. I'm a big sucker for mint chocolate. I always have been. It's God's combination, honestly. It is just too good to pass up. If you haven't tried all the flavors or you're adventurous, you can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. Not only are Built Bars delicious and covered in chocolate, they're also healthy. They can help you lose or maintain weight, or, you know, maybe because of the protein, post some gains if you're building up. All the flavors are between 17 and 18 grams of protein, only 130 to 180 calories, 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. 9 amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Head on over there right now. So, Mary, Loki is over. I'm very sad that it's over, but we got a season 2 coming.
Yep, and we predicted it. Or you, yes, specifically.
Yeah, there were rumors going around that season 2 was not only confirmed, but already shooting. Mm-hmm. So I was excited about that. I wasn't sure how they were going to handle it. Coming into this finale, I had been convinced out of my theory that it was going to be Kang, and I expected it to be a Loki variant. Mm-hmm. So when it was Kang right away, I was like, yes, mm-hmm. yes, I love it. And holy crap, Jonathan Majors was so fun.
Yes. And so fun. I talked about it last week when we had Rachel on the podcast. Shouted out his performance. Very incredible. I know Rachel was a little bit lukewarm on the ending, just because it was, you know, setting up more Marvel stuff for the future, and didn't really feel, I guess, like a complete ending. But I get that. That I think is a valid point, that, you know, Marvel likes to do that and, you know, set things up for the future.
That's comics,
baby. I know, it is. And
never ends.
I get it. But I think that the fact that a season 2 will really help, you know, solidify more of the arcs and stuff like that were, you know, introduced, like at least like the character arcs. So I think that Rachel will eventually be satisfied once the show is over in its entirety, because stuff like WandaVision was its own mini arc. They had to, you know, start and end in very clear, specific places. Like I said, I talked about my thoughts on it last week. I very much enjoyed it. Looking forward to the next season. Big shout out to the performances, but I'm glad you were validated by it being Kang at the end. And also, yeah, the performances. So, any other thoughts on it, Andrew?
I just thought it was super hype. I think that it opens up the MCU to do practically anything now. Like, so much changed with that one episode. And the whole series, I remember Kevin Feige saying, like, WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier didn't represent big changes to the rest of the MCU for the most part, but Loki was going to impact everything. And the whole series was like, it doesn't seem like it's touching that much on like what's going to happen in phase 4. And then episode 6 was just like a gong show of destroying everything, right? Like, we have no idea where they're going to go now, because they can do essentially anything. Mm-hmm. And like, all the rumors of, you know, like Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield being back for the next Spider-Man movie, and like the chaos that could be the next Doctor Strange movie and Madness of Multiverse. And then you hear like Taika Waititi saying that like Thor Love and Thunder is the craziest thing he's ever done, when he's literally cast himself as Hitler before in a satirical movie about Nazi Germany. Like, I'm so excited for the MCU to continue going into this crazy portion. And like, I was watching it with my wife yesterday, because we weren't able to watch it when we were out camping, obviously. And she brought up the point that like every single phase of the MCU gets like more comic booky, mm-hmm. right? Like they take more risks, and that's super exciting, because we've only touched on the very surface of Phase 4 here with these Disney Plus shows, and there's so much coming.
Yeah, the like, weirder, the better.
Content schedule is crazy. Yeah,
the weirder, the better, in my opinion. I mean,
absolutely. I'm all for grounded stories, but I want it to
and
get
yeah,
weird
don't get
too.
Me wrong. A lot of that stuff in the earlier phases was pretty hype, but this is like, this is, I think, what I'm not a comic book person by any means, but I think this is what, you know, comic book fans are waiting for, to go off the walls, go absolute bananas. I'm here for it. I'm here for Marvel trying different things. I know you want to talk about Black Widow. I have not watched it. I don't know if I...
Oh, we won't talk about
okay.
it then.
Okay, well, you can. I don't really care to hear either way, because it's probably not... My thing about Black Widow is, spoiler alert, she's already dead. So it's hard for me to care about a character that is gone, and I wish she wasn't, but that is neither here nor there. It's just difficult for me to care about a movie like that, because I didn't really, I wasn't a big fan of her, but like, you know, I didn't really need to see her backstory and stuff. So you can spoil away. I don't care that much. I just,
All right. Well, I would suggest, like, obviously don't pay $35 for it on Premier Access if you're not excited for it. But when it drops for free, not for free, because you have to subscribe to
Disney
Plus. It's
free. I use my parents' Disney Plus. We're all good.
Okay, there you go. It's free. So, yeah, definitely watch it for free. I really enjoyed it. It was a very solid movie. I think there were some parts where I wish they would have gone in, not necessarily in a different direction, but expanded a little bit more. Specifically on the villain side of it. But I find Marvel often shortchanges their villains a little bit to create more story for their heroes, which is overall probably a good thing. And nothing in this movie precludes the advancement of the villain storyline either. And I thought it was a pretty satisfying expansion of Natasha's character, and I think that you will absolutely love Yelena. Mm-hmm. She was so good. Florence Pugh was so good.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, that's probably what I've heard the most about is her performance.
Oh my God. So. I'm so excited to see what she can do going forward, because I think she's a big part of their plans. She's going to be in the Hawkeye series.
Okay.
I'm interested in that. Yeah, I mean, in the Hawkeye series, I was not interested in at all when they dropped it, because I just don't really care about MCU Hawkeye. I like comic Hawkeye a little bit more, but they're basing it on the Matt Fraction run from the comics, which is like the pinnacle of Hawkeye stories, and that's super exciting to me. I'm excited to see how they're gonna like transfer that story, because they've made Hawkeye a family man instead of like a good for nothing bachelor loser, mm-hmm. which he is in the comics. So it's an interesting situation. I wonder if they kind of roll in the idea of him. The whole Ronin storyline of him turning into an awful person, and maybe he can't hack family life anymore, which would be really tragic. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited for that series. I also love Kate Bishop.
Yeah,
so
that's, I think, the biggest thing I'm excited for in that series.
Yeah, and the other thing with that is, like, Hailee Steinfeld, who I know is, like, a Disney Channel alum, but I had never really heard of until I watched Bumblebee, and she is so good in Bumblebee, so charismatic. So I'm excited to see what she can do with Kate Bishop, and it seemed like she just like put everything into the role. She like learned how to do her own archery and everything, so excited for that. Black Widow was good, definitely not the MCU's best movie, but a solid entry.
If it's something I want to, you know, watch for free on Disney Plus one day, possible. It's just not a side story I care to watch, but you know, I'm glad for
the delay of it. Also,
yeah,
hurts,
that really hurt. That kind of like sucked my, you know, possible interest out because it just kept getting delayed and delayed. But you know, glad that people enjoyed it. Let Scarlett Johansson rest, please.
Yes. Yeah. She did what she could. I think she was great in this movie. It was her best performance as Natasha.
That's good.
And the family stuff is quite good.
All right.
The dinner scene that was teased in the trailers is very good. It's like very Russian, mm-hmm. in a lot of respects. Gives a lot of background to Natasha's character and how she views things, and also some of like the moral ambiguity of her previous spy life, right? And like what she did to defect. It's pretty interesting, but we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening to the Crossjack NHL show. I'm so excited to be back here with Mary and talking to you. We are going to be back on Thursday with Erica from Seattle, Locked On Kraken, sorry. And before we let you go, we got to tell you about the Locked On Today podcast. Why Evan Mobley might not be a lock for Houston with the second pick. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.